That was Lady Gaga's Marry the Night. God, I love her. Don't you?
Yes, I really do like Lady Gaga.
Anyways, welcome back to the Fast Delivery Radio Show on 328.86 FM. And now we have a new segment called Crossing Boundaries.
Crossing Boundaries.
Where you send in your stories about you or your family members' experiences on crossing boundaries.
Our first submission is about a girl named Destiny Pia. She's a 14-year-old girl who chooses her boyfriend over her parents' order. She wants to be satisfied, but she also wants to satisfy her parents and hope they never find out. So, let's just see what happens next.
Yeah, I was in love with him, even though he didn't know I existed. But yeah, being with that person is just kind of feeling like if you feel like your family's not there for you for a little bit, you have someone to go to and like talk, that person will be there for you.
Words of wisdom from the girl who fell too hard.
When's the first time when I fell in love? Don't laugh at me, but kindergarten. Because I had a crush on this guy, and he did not dig me, so he went with this other white girl. So he left me for him, and he was like everything. Like, even my mom knew about it, and my aunt knew about it. And I remember I was like so happy because we went on a zoo trip together, the whole class. And we took a picture together, and I still had it. And then that one day when I met someone else in second grade, I just cut it up because I was just like, I'm done with him.
Destiny fell in love with her eyes, not her heart.
It's kind of like I love the feeling more than liking the feeling of being loved, if that makes any sense.
Destiny and her boyfriend have been together for
about six months.
6 months, right?
Yeah.
And she feels like he's the one. But is she ready for it?
I feel like there's some days where I just feel like, what's the point of this? Reality actually slapped me in the face like weeks ago, and it kind of just made me feel like, why am I doing this? But it was just something about him is like that told me just to stay here and not to like go.
The cost of her decision was her parents losing trust in her.
That's a really hard question for me. I feel like as if I was to lose my parents' trust, like for the rest of my life, it would be really hard to gain back because I had so many chances with them that I just can't ruin this time. I feel like, wow, like, you know, right now I'm 14 and I have my whole life ahead of me, but just something told me that this is the person that I just want to be with the rest of my life with, and that I didn't even go into high school yet, and I'm saying this, but I just feel like this feeling that I never experienced before, now that I am experiencing it, then it's something that's different. But for now, it's just a good thing that I appreciate.
She wished she could change things, but that's not how life goes.
Yeah, I mean, when I was younger, I had experiences that I regret, but life is all about making mistakes and to fix it. You know, learn is from learning from it, but I just feel like I need him because it's just the best feeling in the world because you have a companion, you know, that you could rely on, you feel like you could rely on and you could talk to and be with, and you just feel like the rest of the world doesn't really matter at the time. Yeah.
She feels like choosing him is a risk.
Well, isn't life all about taking risks? At the same time, I also do think about my parents at the same time. They gave me about like 3 chances already with him. And for me to keep this going is a big risk. And I just hope that Chuan understands that and knows that if anything does happen that's bad and horrible, then I hope he's there with me at the end of the day.
Destiny and her parents have different roads that she can go down, but which one would she choose?
So I was actually waiting for you to ask me that question because now to think about it, it's not that I'm choosing him over school or anything. I do think about school.
You're like trying to balance it.
Yeah,
out,
moving
towards him.
That's one thing that I'm kind of good and bad at balancing things. School is really important to me right now, and with him, it's just a nice thing to come home to. Just hearing his voice, just to let me know that he's okay and everything's going to be okay. And he motivates me to do good in school, and I just try my best. You know, math isn't actually my greatest subject, but I'm trying to work at it. And
the question is, why is she choosing him? Is her parents' love not enough?
Well, I can't answer that until I have my own child, but my mom basically always told me that you're not going to know that I love you until you have your own child. Not 100%. Yeah, I don't feel it. Of course, every teenager goes through this. They're not going to give a shit about their family. And they're just going to go choose that over family. But it's not about me choosing him over family. It's the fact that I'm just taking a risk that I never took. I feel like sometimes I did a mistake for saying we started actually talking on Twitter, and it was a mistake that I said I love you. My dad was actually cool with it in the beginning. He said that, oh, this is just puppy love. And I remember talking to him. We went to go out to go eat, just me and my dad. So I was like, Dad, you know there's this guy, that this Asian guy that actually wrote a song in Chinese, and he was like, cool and stuff like that. And he goes to the school and he was like, oh, that's cool, you know, maybe. My dad was like, maybe you could go to his house and actually chill with him and write songs with him and stuff like that. And until that weekend of Labor Day when we had our school on Monday, I said I loved you, and I was on my phone constantly, and that's when everything kind of got twisted. My parents didn't trust me, didn't feel like this was the right road for me to go down.
So you're basically saying that your parents are scared that you're going to get pregnant at a young age if you fall too hard?
Yeah. Right now, I'm like at the tip of falling too hard, but it's just up to me to control myself. You know, he's everything. I just hope that my family accepts him for who he is and what he does for me. Not that the fact that he buys me gifts or comes to meet me after school, just the effort he puts into me and the time he does for me.
Remembering the first glance of her boyfriend.
Yes. First, his younger sister actually went to school with me and is still at the school right now. And she asked me, she was like, so, excuse me, what's your name? And I go like, Destiny, my name is Destiny. Why? She's just like, nothing. So then I was like, okay, who's this person? Okay. So I see that girl. I went to school after school. I see that girl. And I was like, hey, didn't you ask for my name yesterday? She's like, oh, yeah, I remember. I need to tell you something. My brother likes you. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, really? So what school does he go to? And she says, he's in high school in 10th grade. And I was like, oh, my gosh, 10th grader. So we started talking. I went to his house, actually. And I walked his sister back to his house because I actually tutored her. And me and him, he asked me, hey, what's your Twitter name? It's Leo Forever. I think at the point, I'm going to tell you the truth, that he was pretty shy at first. So I texted him first. I was just like, hey, it's Destiny. We start with the letter thing. And then after the letter thing, he started getting more attracted to me and coming after school waiting for me. And we just started writing letters and letters and letters and stuff like that.
What happens when her parents find out she's been crossing their boundaries?
Oh my gosh. I would be in deep, deep trouble. First, I would get a whipping. Of course.
Obviously.
Yes, I would get a whipping. My parents will confiscate all my electronics, take away all my hair stuff. I bet you they would do that. Take away all my clothes. I know my mom's going to do that this time. Yeah, my parents are strict. And you know how people say strict parents create sneaky kids? Because, you know, when you're feeling like you're held back, like you said earlier, you're going to want to do it anyways. Either way, you're going to either do it this way or you're going to do it that way. When you're feeling like you're held back, you can't do it, you're going to have an urge to want to do it.
What will she say?
I'm like sweating right now. I'm going to say, it's him. It's that guy, you know? I'm really scared. Like, I always think about it every day. Like, oh, crap, you know. So I gotta be extra, extra careful. And it just kind of makes me cry because, like, I don't want this day to come. At the same time, it's gonna have to come because the people I told, I trust them to the point where I feel like they're not gonna tell for me because why hold it against me, you know. But for now, I just basically need to focus on right now and not focus on the future. But at the same time, I got to think about it and see what life brings me to. So, yeah, it's a hard question to answer.
What's her decision?
No, I'm going to tell her that, you know, this is the guy I want to be with, you know, and hope you understand that. Guy I just want to be with. You can't control who I want to love or like in the future, and it's up to her to accept it or not, because she's gonna have to accept it either way. If this guy asked me to marry him, what are you gonna say now? No. The fact that they gave me so many chances and so many, they've been really patient with me, it's like, what's the point?
That was pretty intense. I just hope that she's getting better at keeping this a secret. So, yeah. Our next submission is from a girl named Temperance Moore. She asked her aunt to tell her stories about how she's very harsh, how she got to be very harsh, and how she learned how to be more sensitive.
I had to learn how to be more sensitive. I was cutthroat. I was told to be honest. You always be honest. And I was even honest if it hurt people, and I really didn't care. So if when I was in elementary school, a little girl said, "You like my dress?" I said, "No, I don't like your dress. It's ugly." And I had the girl crying. When I was in second or third grade, kids were talking about Santa Claus. I said, "There is no Santa Claus. My mother and father said it was a man named Saint Nicholas. Him and his wife lived in Germany. They had a horse and a carriage. They delivered toys to underprivileged children who were poor, and they went from house to house in a carriage. There is no Saint Nicholas. There is no Santa Claus." I said, "They named him a saint because he was a nice person." And all the kids were crying, and my teacher said, "How dare you come here and tell these kids that? Your mom and dad buy your toys," is what I said. Somebody asked, showed me a picture of their boyfriend, told me he is fine. I said, "What the heck? He look like a monkey. He is ugly." I said, "He's black as I don't know what. Ew." A couple of people showed me their boyfriends, and I told them they were ugly. I had boyfriends that I told them they were, guys I dated told them they were ugly. Guys that I told that liked me, and he said, "Well, Joy, I'm trying to talk to you." I said, "Well, I don't like you because you stink. You smell, your breath stink, you stink, you need to go to the dentist." I said, "Your clothes stink, go wash your butt, you smell like piss and poop. Who wants to date you smelling like that?" In my adulthood, I told the guy the same thing, and I went from not knowing how to be tactful. I told off pastors. I told off bosses. I told off teachers. When I was in junior high school, I was in eighth grade. My French teacher was handicapped. He was blind in one eye, and the other eye shook back and forth, side to side. And he had one of his arms, the fist stayed balled up. And he kept calling me another girl's name. And he said, "Joy, I know it's you." I said, "I'm sitting right in front of you. It's not me." So he said, "You're going to fail my class." I said, "How am I going to fail your class? I'm getting an A." So he said, "You're going to go down at least one mark. So if I got an A, I'm going to go down one mark. It's a B." Mm-hmm. Well, I was a teacher's pet in a lot of my classrooms. So for my eighth grade home class, I had access to report cards, everything, tests, because I had the closet key. And so I got the report cards for all the other kids. So I saw my report card. This fool gave me a D. Wow. How did I go from an A to a D? So I went up to his classroom. Mm-hmm. So he said, "You're not supposed to have access to the, how do you know what grade you got?" He said, "You got what you deserve." I said, "No, I didn't." So I got so angry, I punched his desk. I didn't punch him. Mm-hmm. So he said, "You got what you deserve." I said, "Look, you didn't know who I was because you can't see out of one eye. I told him. So I told him about himself, and he told me if I would have gotten my parent and have come up like a nice young lady, then maybe he would have changed my grade. But my mouth got me in trouble. And my mother used to always tell me that mouth was going to get me in trouble. And I constantly would tell people exactly how I felt. I told my parents how I felt. My mother said, "Do you feel like going to the store?" I said, "No, I don't." And she said, "You don't feel?" But she said, "Will you tell your mother no?" I said, "No, I don't." I said, "I'm your child. You don't ask your child, do you feel like, if you ask me a question, you expect a yes or no answer.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but if you want me to go to the store, you give me a command and you say, Joy, go to the store. Mm-hmm. But if you ask me a question, I have a right to give you a yes or no answer.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the type of person I was, child I was. But my crossover was when my dad got sick and ended up getting amputations and bedridden. And I had to learn how to be sensitive. And that kind of shocked my mind and my emotions that I can't just say whatever I want to say. Because then what happened, when people came over to my house and they questioned, well, why didn't you clean your dad's wound this way? And why didn't you do it this way? And nurses and doctors was coming at me and family members. And you should do this with your father. You should do this for your mother. And I found out that the same way they attacked me with their mouth is the way I attacked others.
Mm-hmm.
So the crossover, it was a humbling experience that I did not like because I was doing the best I could. So these people that stumped. Maybe that was the best that they could think. Maybe they didn't have, you know, they couldn't wash their clothes
mm-hmm.
regularly. Maybe they had no running water. So I don't know why they stumped. You know, maybe, you know, like these kids, I could have been more sensitive. I need to learn how to be tactful. I need to learn how to say things in a loving and nice manner. And learn that each person is different. And, I had to learn how to, that the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, gentleness, meekness, you know, faith, temperance. You know, I had to learn all of those things, but the main fruit that I didn't have evident in my life was gentleness. And it, whenever you have a problem, there's a root to every problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the root to my problem was actually my upbringing. My mother spoke to me like that. She was very harsh and was not very loving. And that's why I turned out to be harsh and was not very loving. But I ended up learning that you can't, you know, you hurt people's feelings. I started getting my feelings hurt. Then I would say after the first crossover was my father getting sick and dying. The second crossover was my mother getting sick and having Alzheimer's, and she wasn't in her right mind. And when mom is sick, it's different from when dad is sick, because mom, everybody loves mom. You treat mom sweet. So now I'm telling everybody my mother's mind isn't right, something's wrong. And plus, my mother was the mother of the church, so she had respect from neighbors, family members, cousins, nieces, her own sisters and brothers respect. Now here am I giving her tough love, and people told me, you don't do this with your mom. And again, I got attacked. So then I learned how to be more gentle. And I'm still learning, because you have to treat and get to know people. Everybody's different. And so maybe I need to come a little more calmer. And that's what I learned in life. That was my crossover, from being rough and harsh to being treating people gentle and loving.
Was there ever a time where you were grateful for...
being harsh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Felt good. Gotta get that stuff off your chest. It felt good. Because I'm not lying. It felt good to tell my boss off, not to, a couple of years ago, but I had to pay a price for it. Told her she was a bully. And it felt good. I told her she needed some mental therapy for mine. And I told her she needed to take St. John's wort, a herb that helps you with your emotions. And she is very, like, where other people can get away with stuff, I can't, because of what I said to her. So I'm paying a price. So you do. So it's both ways. You feel good, but then you can also pay a price. So yeah, it does pay off. It does pay off, because I had to tell, when my mom was dying in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
I had to tell the doctor off. He was calling me every 10 minutes. And so... I had to tell him off. I said, how are you calling us? You call me every 10 minutes. How is that helping the situation? You're just putting more pressure on me. Well, I'm trying to tell you, what's going on with your mother. I said, well, calling me every 10 minutes, telling me that my mother's respiratory system and she's about to die any minute. How is that helping me? You're not doing anything for me. I said, don't call me no more. I said, if you can't call me between this hour and that hour, I don't want to hear it. So I had to be harsh. And it paid off because he stopped calling me at 10, 11 o'clock at night to tell me that my mother's breathing wasn't fine and that she was going to die.
What would you prefer, being sensitive or being harsh?
That's a hard question to answer. Because sometimes when I was lenient to my family members when my mother was sick, I should not have been. I think I should have told them off and maybe possibly even had cussed them out. I mean, literally down to the nitty-gritty, use curse words and ask Jesus to forgive me later. Because they were so rude and nasty to me while I was taking care of my mother. They were very insensitive to what was going on. I feel like they don't respect me. You know, they figure I'm the youngest. I'm 44 years old. I'm a grown woman. I got gray hair just like they have gray hair. So, you know.
Ooh, I wouldn't want to be her enemy.
Shit, I wouldn't either.
The next interview was submitted by a girl named Crystal Hudgens. She chose to interview her grandmother, who had a child at the age of 16 and still managed to become successful in money and knowledge.
I interviewed my grandmother, who had my mother at the age of 16.
I think being pregnant at a young age does mature you a lot faster, but I was always a mature and responsible even kid to the point that my mother left my siblings with me when she went to work. So I always had responsibility of looking after children. I love children, and I gravitated toward little children. And so in one instance, becoming pregnant was a shock for a lot of people, but then not so much because of how I love kids and knew how to take care of children. I did not know the detail that you have to get into psychologically when you're raising a child, but my feeling was you provide the basic necessities as in milk, diapers, attention, love, and the rest of it kind of works itself out. I was healthy. My baby was healthy. I was able to take a year off from school and then go back to school because her grandmother watched her while I went to school and finished my last 2 years of high school.
I wondered, was it scary?
It came partly from my mother giving me that extra responsibility when I was a young person and teaching me how to care for a baby. So it wasn't scary to me. I knew how to make formula. I knew how to change diapers. I knew how to wash clothes long before I became pregnant. I did all of those things as a very young person. And so when the issue of me starting to become involved with boys and having my first boyfriend happened, and then the fact that my mother passed so shortly after I started dating, or allowed to have company, as they called it back then. The sexual aspect probably happened a lot sooner than it should have because of all of those things. It wasn't a one isolated incident type thing where I had sex one time and I got pregnant. I had a boyfriend. I got pregnant by my first boyfriend. But we had been seeing each other for almost a year and a half prior to me getting pregnant. So the fact that my mother allowed me to start having company maybe as a teenager might have played a role in that. And everything just kind of unfolded rather quickly, especially after my mother died. I was lonely. I was devastated by the fact of losing my mother, and you have to understand, as a young girl, your relationship with your mother is key and important, and it caused me to start seeking time and affection from other people in ways that ultimately resulted in me becoming pregnant.
I asked my grandmother how her mother passing played a role in her becoming pregnant.
I think I probably would have still gotten pregnant because I was already sexually active prior to my mother passing. I think if my mother had lived, because she was a young teenage mother, she might not have allowed me to keep the baby. That might have been the only difference. I can't really say that for sure, but I think my feeling is that if she was alive, she would have talked to me about the long-term ramifications of having a child so young, and she might have tried to dissuade me from having the baby, and maybe she would have been successful with that because she would have been able to tell me some of the things that, because I was young, I was completely oblivious to. I thought all you had to do was love a child and provide basic needs, and that was pretty much it. And now, being an older person and having children and been through a divorce and have grandchildren, I know that life entails a lot more than that, and making a decision to have a child and keep a child is much more monumental than I even ever thought.
How did you come out so successful from such a difficult situation?
I think part of it is my overall personality of never giving up, not necessarily taking the first no for an answer, realizing that I had a responsibility not only to myself but to this child that did not ask to come into the world, so that I always had to try to do my absolute best because I had a responsibility to my baby to give her the best possible life that I could. Being independent is just part of my basic personality, so depending on someone else, no matter who it is, would not ever be my ultimate option. It always falls back, I think, on a personal responsibility for the decisions that you make.
I wonder how her friendships changed.
All the other mothers of my circle of girlfriends felt that I was fast and loose and cautioned their daughters from being in my company. So I lost my little circle of close friends, which caused me to feel even more isolated. And it was traumatic.
What opportunities does she think that she might have missed?
I'm sure that there's some jobs and some schooling opportunities that I would have taken advantage of earlier in my life had I not had a child. But once the decision was made to have the baby, and I had the baby, my focus became my baby and how to provide shelter, food, necessities, and some wants. And so I didn't focus on what I didn't have or what I wasn't going to be able to get or what I wasn't going to be able to do. Of course, there was some Friday and Saturday nights when everybody was going out and being social and doing different things that other teenagers get to do, I knew I couldn't do. If I have to think about it in retrospect now, I think the only thing that might have changed is that I might have done some of the things that I ended up doing anyway. I would have done them sooner. If anything, I saw myself postponing or delaying my education until after. We had many happy days together. Being pregnant as a teenager is not necessarily a sad thing. You know, I enjoyed being my daughter's mother. We had birthday parties, we had outings, and because I was young, the upside of that is I could enjoy playing with her. I could get on the floor. I could play all afternoon. I could read books and do things with her that people that get pregnant much, much earlier may not have the energy, the mindset, the fortitude, or any of that for. So on the plus side, I did have that. I think if anything, the most negative was the financial portion of it was very, very hard.
You know, you and my mom, she's your daughter, always, tell me, to focus on school and whatever my priorities are and not put so much weight on relationship. Do you think that has something to do with how much weight or, how much you put on your relationship back then when you were a teenager?
Yes. And that's exactly the reason why. I think when anybody is responsible about the choices that they make, even if you get derailed or postponed, if you're really passionate about something, keep trying. Keep trying. There's more than one way to do everything. There's always another avenue to try. The more you ask questions, you'll get a variety of answers. Try to choose the one that's best for you and what you're trying to do at that time, but you have to be focused, anyone. So it was not impossible. And nothing is. Short of death, nothing should stop you from trying to complete whatever it is you want to do and whatever it is you start.
I took from this interview that anything is possible with determination and focus. Thank you.
Finally, our last interview was submitted by a girl named Bailey Britton. She decided to interview her grandmother, Candace, who has breast cancer, and how she had to work through it and how it affected her life and her family.
It was, I was 48. I went to the gynecologist to get, all your women checkups, and that was in March. And they gave me a prescription to get a mammogram because they said I was in my late 40s and they wanted me to get it. They didn't find anything. They didn't feel anything. So no one in my family at all has ever had breast cancer. They all have heart disease. So I thought if anything ever happened, it was going to be with my heart. Like all of my great aunts had all died of heart disease and my grandmother. So that was the last thing. I never thought of breast cancer, and I never felt anything. So that was in March, and in May I was driving to work. My cell phone slid on the floor, and it was on the passenger side. And of course me, in case anybody was going to call me, I had to have my stupid cell phone. So I reached over to grab it on the floor, and when I did, my car hit a guardrail. I just kept driving, like it didn't do anything. Thank God there was nobody on the side of me, because I really am not a good driver. But anyway, my car on the passenger side, the car door, the part where the wheel is, I couldn't open the door. And I pulled it, and I pulled it, and I pulled and pulled and pulled. I, like, yanked it, and it came back, and it hit me in the breasts. And just, did you ever see the cartoons where somebody gets hurt and then they see stars going around? I saw stars. It hurt. It hurt that bad. So all I kept thinking is, now I got to go home and tell your grandpa that I damaged the car again. So I go to work and I don't call him, of course, not for a while. And I was fine. I just couldn't get my car door open after that. After it hit, it didn't hurt anymore. But within like a couple days, it was like a flat lump. But it wasn't, when you get hurt and you hit something, it turns black and blue. This didn't turn black and blue. So I thought, ooh, something might not be right here. And I just didn't know what it was. So I made an appointment and I went to a breast doctor. And they said, that's not good. And they did a biopsy. I guess I went back after they did some blood work too. And they said, we need to do a biopsy. And they do the biopsy in the office. And it hurt. It hurt so bad. And they called me right away and said, you need to come in here. they thought I was in the third stage of breast cancer, and it was an aggressive cancer. So apparently, whatever had happened, and I'm just going to say it was just like for the grace of God, that I got in the car accident because it forced me to get that mammogram, because without that mammogram, I would have never known that this was there. They couldn't even see that on the mammogram. They were just trying to check out what that, you know, lump was. So they told us that it was in the third stage because of the size of it. And they don't know much till they go inside. So that was in May, and I had my surgery done in July. In fact, it was the day before Aunt Jackie's bridal shower. I had it done because I needed to have it done. Aunt Jackie and Uncle Billy were getting married in September, and this was in July. So I had to get this done because of the wedding, and it just happened to have been that date, and there was nothing I could do about it. We had already planned her shower and everything, and her mom knew, you know, everybody knew, but Aunt Jackie didn't know it was her shower. So I had that done. But before that, you have to go and you have to get all these tests done. They do a scan of your whole body, because they have to see if it was anyplace else. I was lucky because it wasn't anyplace else, but it was an aggressive cancer, so it still wasn't good. And it was what was called HER2 positive, and it's very rare. So not only did I have breast cancer that no one in my family had, I had a HER2 positive that was pretty rare. It was hard. It was really, really hard, because I have, like, my life is, like, flashing before my eyes. Your grandfather and I, we were just devastated. We didn't know what was going to happen. And finally, I had this surgery. I mean, we had ups and downs, you know, times, just your emotions are just all over the place. You don't know what's happening. And you have to wait till all these tests are done and everything comes back before you can get the surgery to find out anything. So you're waiting for a couple weeks to find out if you're going to live or die. That was really, really rough. And you were the only grandchild. And I was like, I can't do this, you know. So we did a lot of praying. And I had the surgery. We decided to have it removed. Because they go down and they check all your nodes, your lymph nodes in your body. And they check, and they could check like the first 10 and the 11th one could be bad, you know. So we opted to have them all out, and that's what fights, you know, infection in your body. Like here, this I have this on my finger, and I've had this for about a week, and it's just a little paper cut. So this side heals a lot slower because of the lymph nodes. I had them all removed because I didn't want to take a chance. So when they went in, they found out that, thank God, what happened was there was a lot of calcium deposits that had built around this, so it was bigger than they thought it was. So I wasn't in the third to the fourth stage. I was in the first stage, which was good. But in the meantime, I had to have chemo, and I had to have it 3 times every 2 weeks, and it's called dose density chemo. Every 2 weeks for 4 weeks, I had to have this chemo. My first chemo was on August 18th. The chemo is cumulative, so like this week I might have it, you know, I'll get it like this week, and then I'll feel fine. And then the following week, I get it again. And, you know, I feel a lot worse because from that one and then the second one, go into your chemo more, it gets worse. It just tears your body apart because chemo kills everything, even the good cells in your body. So I lost my hair. I lost my eyebrows. I lost the hair under my arms, my legs. I mean, I lost hair everywhere. And that's hard, waking up and finding just clumps and clumps of your hair coming out. And I would just cry. I just cried. But everything seemed to be okay. I mean, so far. Then after the chemo, I was so excited to get my last dose of chemo. And the oncologist walks in and he said, I want you to do 4 more rounds of chemo. And I'm like, there's no way. There's no way. It makes you feel like someone is taking your bones and literally grinding them. And I would get this on Thursday, and I was fine Thursday, I was fine Friday. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, I couldn't move. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I would feel better. And then I was ready to go back into the next round and start all over. For the first couple years, I would go every 6 months to the oncologist, and they check your blood levels. And then you go to the breast doctor, and, you know, she would still check. And now I go once a year to both, and they just check me like that once a year. You wake up every day, and you just go, thank you, thank you. And you go to bed at night, and you say, thank you. Could it come back? Yeah, but my chances are like anybody else. I'm not happy that I have it at all. I am happy that my life changed. I'm happy that life's constant change. This forces you to do it faster, you know? I mean, even though I was in my 40s, it forced me to grow up and look on the other side. There's a life. And say, wow. I had Grandpa and I. My mom did nothing but cry. And I didn't want to talk about it with the kids. We would just say, you know, I'm going to be okay. Mm-hmm. That's what you say, no matter how old they are. Even your mom, you know, they were a lot old. They were older than your Uncle Billy and your Aunt Stacy. And say, things are going to be okay. It's all going to be good. And your grandpa, it was basically just me and your grandpa going through this. And like I said, we did a lot of crying. Did it make me feel better crying? I don't know. That I can't answer. I don't know. But I definitely value my life now. And not that I didn't before, but it's different. I mean, just watching all the grandkids grow up, I cannot believe you're 16. Like, it's like I blinked and you were 16. And I love just watching you guys all grow. Like, it's just amazing. It's a wonderful feeling, because like you said, I'm not happy I had it, but I can see life with different lenses on now.
Yeah. I don't really have anything else to ask.
Okay.
Because I feel like I'm going to cry.
Well, that concludes our first episode of
Crossing Boundaries.
Stay tuned for episode 2 tomorrow. Now let's get back to the music. You guys chose this song, and yeah, so this is Bruno Mars, Everywhere.